Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. Huh? Got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. Sorry for the delay in having a show. We've been away for a while, but we're back now, and we're ready to roll with some more shows.
You've been looking for Simon in the field.
Yeah, exactly. he's out bird watching or something. We want to thank those people who have selected to follow us so far. As always, we can be found on iTunes by searching for The Back of the Class, and we can also be reached via email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. My name is Patrick O'Shea. I'm an independent educational technology consultant. With us, as always, or as almost always, is Daniel Curry Corcoran, the Executive Director of Accountability at Newport News Public Schools. Simon Richmond is out today, and taking his place is Mark Salata, the founder and CEO of Mining Gems.
Hello, everyone.
I could give Mark a few minutes to introduce himself, but it's a 30-minute show.
But then our show would be over.
We've only got 30 minutes, so we need to wrap it up quickly. Actually, Mark, if you want to just take a minute or so and explain who you are and what you do, and then we'll get to the topic.
Oh, okay, sure. Well, thank you very much. Basically, I'm a consultant like you, and I go and train teachers, and mainly in Hong Kong and Singapore by happenstance. And actually, right after this show, I'm going to be going off to the Education Bureau here in Hong Kong and working with about 80 teachers to transform the classroom into a student-centered classroom. And such that the teachers facilitate more than dictate, and that the students take control of their learning, or at least the steps towards taking control of their learning. And the main thing that my company does is to try to transform human relations to be positive, creative, and collaborative by actually recognizing the gems that are within each individual. And that's why the name of the company is Mining Gems. And I have the good luck to actually have known you guys for a few years, and
it's great debatable. To be back.
Yeah, and it's great to be back. And I won't mention anything about ODU, even though I have no connection, and I won't rise up University of Virginia to any unattainable heights that it hasn't already had.
All right. Well, thank you, Mark, for joining us and taking the place of Simon, who's, I'm sure, off on the field somewhere.
I'm sure I can't take his place. Not at all. I mean,
yes, you can.
I'm not. No, I can't. I mean, come on. I'm not kayaking. I'm not making seal boots. I'm not doing anything like that. So. Uh-huh.
The new guy getting jabs in. That's great. All right. Well, I have. I brought the topic for tonight, and so I'm going to read an article.
Hold your breath out there.
Is it in English?
It is in English.
Excellent.
This is actually an article I found quite a while back. It's from Boston, the Boston Globe.
Good place,
it's,
Boston.
It's something that I'm very interested in this topic.
I hear there's some good schools up there.
Yeah, well, this is about the Cushing Academy. So I don't know if you've heard of that or not. The title of the article is "Welcome to the Library, Say Goodbye to the Books." So I'm going to read this to you. There are rolling hills and ivy-covered brick buildings. There are small classrooms, high-tech labs, and well-manicured fields. There's even a clock tower with a massive bell that rings for special events. Cushing Academy has all the hallmarks of a New England prep school with one exception. This year, after having amassed a collection of more than 20,000 books, officials at the pristine campus about 90 minutes west of Boston have decided the 144-year-old school no longer needs a traditional library. The academy's administrators have decided to discard all their books and have given away half of what stocked their sprawling stacks. The classics, novels, poetry, biographies, tomes on every subject from the humanities to the sciences. The future, they believe, is digital. When I look at books, I see an outdated technology, like scrolls before books, says James Tracy, headmaster of Cushing and chief promoter of the Bookless campus. This isn't Fahrenheit 451, that 1953 Ray Bradbury novel in which books are banned. We're not discouraging students from reading. We see this as a natural way to shape emerging trends and optimize technology. Instead of a library, the Academy is spending nearly $500,000 to create a learning center, though that is only one of the names in contention for the new space. In place of the stacks, they are spending $42,000 on three large flat-screen TVs that will project data from the internet, and $20,000 on special laptop-friendly study carrels. Where the reference desk was, they are building a $50,000 coffee shop that will include a $12,000 cappuccino machine. and to replace those old pulpy devices that have transmitted information since Johannes Gutenberg invented the printing press in the 1400s, they have spent $10,000 to buy 18 electronic readers made by Amazon.com and Sony. Administrators plan to distribute the readers, which they're stocking with digital materials to students looking to spend more time with literature. And it goes on a little bit further, but you get the hint. So I wanted to open up the floor to this idea of a bookless library and get you guys' thoughts. Let's start with the new guy.
Bye.
Yeah, Mark.
All right, sounds good. I'm done.
Done and done.
Well, I mean, I was raised on books, so the idea of actually letting go of something that you can hold and have this tactile sensation and even, you know, smells and it seems strange. When I was a younger man, I used to spend lots of time in old bookstores and bookstores that had old books. And I just loved the idea of being able to take a book that I found pleasure in and that was maybe 100 years old and imagine all the others who had come before and actually did the same with the same book. I doubt you would necessarily get that feeling if you had a Kindle. Are we getting money for promoting that? A Kindle or a Nook?
No, but I am swimming in your nostalgia.
Yes. I was thinking that a book gives at least some sense of permanence, as in the knowledge is set. It's not changing. And in today's world, we know that knowledge and understanding changes rapidly. And actually, I could see an argument for a book where the type is set, everything is set until the life of the book is over physically, that actually is an antiquated physical semblance of ideas compared to what might be done with electronically, where things can change and alter as we wish over time. So I applaud them for trying this idea out and seeing where it may go.
And you want to get some of the coffee, right?
Yeah. I'd like to know who really said, okay, we really need a coffee shop inside. But I think it's a great idea, a great thought. I wouldn't say let's get rid of books completely because, I mean, I utilize my computer to read articles and whatnot, but I still, maybe it's nostalgia, I still buy books, not as frequently as before, but definitely still do.
Well, do either of you guys actually have a Kindle? Have you ever used one?
I was tempted. Very, very much so. There's this. I mean, I saw this fellow with a Kindle 2. I guess the second coming of a Kindle at an airport, and I just thought it was so cool that he can just take this very small piece of equipment out and be able to read on it. But he didn't tie me down. He didn't threaten me to buy it from him. So I still held off.
What about you, Danny? What do you think of this whole idea?
Yeah, I actually do own a Kindle. I think a Kindle is, I think, and I don't know much about the Sony machine, but, and again, I'm not trying to plug Kindles one way or the other, but one of the things I do is that I think they've done a good job in their design to try to retain the tactile feel. You know, they have a cover that flips open. We actually have quite a few of them in Newport News Public Schools, and people that have said that they would that this was going to be the biggest barrier to them going to digital book format is the idea of turning pagers. They've really adapted to it quite well. I mean, these are, I would say, people that have been in education for quite some time, so not just the Generation X or...
Old folk.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me...
Can we have those names, Danny?
One of the things I really like that these devices really allow you to do is that they allow you, at least the Kindle machine, they allow you to... hook up, you know, it's all on a USB cable, so they allow you to kind of transfer documents from your desktop or your laptop onto the Kindle. So you can take your emails and read them on there, or you can take, say you're at work and you're passing around memos or stuff. So it can actually be a device that you take and read documents. And of course, you can't edit on them, but, you know, I like the Kindle. I think it's nice. I think it has, for me, I was probably, I was an English major in college, so I am of the one who always thought I would have a room in my house with all of my great trophies that I've read. And, you know, they would just be all the books that I've poured through. And, you know, it's a little sad to say I can fit all of them into my laptop case. But one of the things that I really hear in the article, and one of the things that I think we really struggle with in K-12, is this idea of purchasing technology. I didn't hear a lot, and maybe I would have heard more if you had finished. But the idea of professional development, I mean, we talk about this time and time and time and time again, but the idea that we're going to purchase all this technology, it's kind of like what we should be doing, and then, you know, kind of what next. I think teachers have really taken to some of the electronic media very well. The problem is, how do you fit that into a fifth grade social studies classroom or not? And of course, you know, completely getting rid of textbooks. I know one of the... major themes you'll see in the Baha'i faith, for instance, is this idea of, you know, kind of moderation, this idea of moderation in all things. So, I mean, here we've kind of done away with all the textbooks. You want to be on one spectrum or the next. I think we need to find some happy medium and then actually study some of these initiatives in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, the thing I find interesting about this is it seems like we're at this stage in our development where we're transitioning from a tried and true technology to something and just kind of messing around with it to see what's possible. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if these same kind of arguments against change were being made back when the book form was invented itself. Were there people that were saying, well, you know, it'll never take the place of a good scroll? Or a good,
well,
you know what I mean?
I think maybe the arguments were that the masses wouldn't be ready for it. I mean, why would you want to make something for people who can't read?
Well, I'm still uncertain about that.
But that's the point. Was the printing press made for the masses? It was made for the literate.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're actually rolling this technology out to the masses. At least when they did the printing press, they were like, okay, we have a group of people who can buy this product and use it, you know, for people who can read. I don't think everybody and their brother. Now, what it did is it opened up, you know, I mean, I was just looking at a book on my desk for some reason, you know, The Life of Frederick Douglass. Without the printing press, he never learns how to read. So, I mean, I think it has a lot of power. But the idea here is just now we have these Kindles, we're going to make this big shift. We're going to make this big transition, and we're going to cross our fingers because we just got rid of all our library books.
Well, you know, I think it comes back to this idea of how much information is actually permanent and how much of it is continuously changing. I think there are certain things that they're classics. They're always going to be classics. And there's nothing better than sitting down and reading a good book, like holding it in your hand. I'll admit I've never been one for used books. I'm not a big fan of that. When I see a used book, I don't think about all the people who've enjoyed it before. I think about all the people who've sneezed on it before.
So, I was just going to say, are you phobic?
I'm not looking for that. But you know, there's something nice about the permanence of the book, and you know, I don't know what to make of this. I'm a technology guy, and I like the idea of having these resources available, but I don't know if they should completely supplant them. You know, I don't know.
You know what it comes down to for me is this: what do we want to know? What are we looking to obtain? I mean, what are we hoping to get by doing this? You know, they say we're going to get on the technology highway, or we're going to. What are you? Why are you doing it? I think a lot of times in education we do things, but you know, is there a, you know, and again, all of us have been, you know, through graduate work and been through our PhD programs and done research and been published. But the idea of what questions do you want to answer? How are you going to know it's successful? You very rarely hear any comments or talk about, you know, that aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's many years ago where people were trying to say, okay, let's get every school connected to the internet, or let's have one laptop per child. I've heard of schools where they had gone to this idea of getting one laptop per child, and every child did get a laptop, but then they didn't know what the heck to do with it. It wasn't there was no plan for framing, okay, what does it mean to actually have a laptop per child? What's going to come out of it? And then I think what happened was they ended up just treating the laptop just like any other piece of equipment without taking it to the next level of utilizing it for what it was. And so actually some schools have gotten rid of the one laptop per child.
See, this gets exactly back to what Daniel was saying about the idea of, you know, what is the end game? What are we trying mm-hmm. to accomplish with this? Are we? Mm-hmm. Is there added benefit to giving these people access to, you know, millions of virtual books that they mm-hmm. wouldn't get from something else? And I think Daniel's right that it all comes down to the idea that we have to focus on staff development instead of mm-hmm. just providing resources. We have to provide the training on the resources in order to make sure that people are really changing their mm-hmm. current practice. Because, you know, Daniel and I saw this going back 10 years now. You can provide all of the technology you want, but if people are still treating the technology like they would any other, you know, mm-hmm. piece of equipment they've ever had, it doesn't change anything. And education never grows then.
Mm-hmm. The idea of professional development. I'm sorry, Danny. The idea of professional development is that you want to say, okay, well, let's say it's a technology piece you want to help them to empower the teachers to use. I don't think you can go into the room with the teachers and say, okay, this is the framework that's going to happen. This is the materials that you're going to use, and this is how you're going to do it. You have to go in there with the mindset of actually having these teachers consider themselves from their perspective, how does this change the game? How does this change the classroom interaction? And
how's this gonna help me do my job?
And what's that?
How is this gonna help me do my job?
How is it gonna help me do? How is it gonna help you to do that? Oh yeah, exactly. Yep. And how is it going to be? But it has to be personalized. That the individual teacher is going to have to take it in and consider it, and really see a vision that will work for them. And if they have no vision of how this training, you know, the training of the materials and whatever you're bringing in with them is going to help them go where they need to go, which is hopefully improve student learning. Then whatever the professional development you're going to do is not going to work. See, whatever you bring to the classroom is not going to work. You can bring as much technology as possible you want, but it's just going to fail.
Yeah. The idea of asking the question, how does this help me do my job? That's an interesting question, but I think it's, holy cow.
Excuse me.
That's all right. It's an interesting question, but I don't think it's the right question to ask, actually. I think that it's all dependent on people understanding what their job is. Sure. The thing that I've been disappointed with often, not all the time, but often, is that teachers still want to be the conveyor of information and don't see that they're no longer that role. And so if you come into this situation with a bookless library and you're thinking of yourself as the – you are the content provider, then you're way out of your depth. And you'll never be able to figure out how this helps me do my job better. It's simply – go ahead.
I don't think it's a light switch approach like that either. I mean, I work with a lot of teachers every day. I think teachers understand that facilitating –
God love them.
They know this is the right way to go. The problem is, especially in Virginia or anywhere around the U.S. right now, you know, what accountability has made public schools into, and really, you know, the fear of it, and, you know, measuring these minimum competencies. I mean, it's not really – I'm not saying that to do your job, but what I'm saying is that, you know, we have to take people where they're at. We have to – we're just not going to come in there and make them facilitators, you know. People want to know, how can we get quick successes here? How can we show people the power of the technology? And, you know, how do we move? We talk about individualized education plans for students. You know, based on where the teacher is, we need to be able to help teachers where they are, get some success, and then move in a different direction. So I just don't want to lose sight of that. I think teachers, you know, they get lots of things thrown at them every day, the newest fad, the newest idea. But goes back to what Patrick was talking about, and you know, I mean, we've been at this for 10-15 years now thinking about this, and we've actually been able to see what works in the classroom. You know, Patrick and I had an opportunity many years ago, it seems, to you know, to really consult heavily on preparing tomorrow's teachers to use technology grant, federal grant down in Brunswick County, Virginia, and we saw what works and what doesn't work. When teachers have an animated voice in the discussion, they're able to collaborate and choose technologies that work for them, come back and refocus on these technologies, we see success. Here we have another story where, you know, as Mark was saying, we're going to give everybody the same technology and you have to adapt to it and be there. You get kickback on that. It's just how people work.
Well, The workshop that I'm going to be doing after this, and this is no way a plug, by the way.
he says as he plugs.
Yeah, I'll tell you about the books I'm writing right now later. So one of the things at the workshop, I was invited basically to do talk about an instructional model on how these – they're actually science teachers, and how these science teachers can use this instructional model to change their what they're doing in their lessons to engage students and whatnot. And if I designed the workshop to just focus on the model, I mean, I can just give them a diagram and say, well, here's the model, here it is mechanically, and this is it. And you can, you know, follow these steps and then, you know, some kind of panacea for education. However, what I think one reason why I'm invited back, and I was here in May, why I'm invited back is that yes, I provide them the model. However, the workshop is more about me modeling what I would like the teachers to do with the students, where I put the teachers in the center of the conversation, and I provide them many opportunities to reflect on their own practice in light of the model, and then also reorient them back to their original purpose, whatever their personal purpose was to become a teacher. And I think they find that to be empowering, and they also get to learn about the model, which, you know, pleases the hosts that invited me. But I think anything you do to change in the classroom, you have to ask yourself, why am I doing it? Is it a trend that I'm just picking up on? Is it some extra stuff that I'm throwing in because somebody told me to, because somebody told me that it's great, it's going to change everything? The main thing we can change is our own personal perspectives and how we interact with students and how we have students interact with each other in the classroom. I'm more of the thought that no matter what you do technology-wise, it's always down to the human relationships that you develop in the classroom that are going to be the fundamental thing that will change learning. And my commercial is over.
I think all three of us are talking about the idea of having to model these things effectively for teachers before we can expect them to be taken up with their students. And we're absolutely on the right track when we say we have to start with where people are. The thing I do like about this move, it's a bold move, and it's taking people from where they are, but it's jumping both feet into the deep end, and you can either sink or swim, and you know. Sometimes those kind of bold moves are what are needed in order to get people moving forward.
If you can swim,
or if you have some, if you have a lifeguard there that'll help you or save you, then yeah, it's perfectly fine.
I didn't hear any lifeguard in this article though. I just heard we're throwing pool.
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody was talking about the. I mean, this article's not intended to go in depth and be overly critical. All of the people, there's a second page to the article that I could read, but I'm not going to bore everybody with it, that interviews a lot of the people.
You might.
I might bore people?
Yeah.
More than I already have? I'm sorry.
No, but I think you raised that's the point, and that's actually a very good analogy. I like the idea of throwing people into the pool, but the idea is, you know, we need lifeguards standing around. Some people aren't ready for 9-foot water. Maybe some people are, you know, just ready to step into the 3-foot or the 6-foot. We need to throw people into the water, and we need to provide them some direction. We need strong leadership to help people take steps that are going to move them forward and to go to the next step. Sure. No doubt about that. But the idea is, without that leadership to help people meet them where they're at, and not to take, and to take important steps, to be a part of the team, to, you know, I'm going to change what I do. But, you know, and setting some measurable goals for that, you know, that's a lot of work. It's really much easier just to say, and we're done with our books. We're going to use these Kindles. And all the teachers are like, yeah, all right. You know. All right, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see where that's going to go.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, let's. It sounds like we're kind of wrapping up this topic. I think it's an interesting starting point. It's nowhere near an end point. So at this point, I think that instead of belabor this any further, we'll just go to our takeaway points. And if nobody has anything pressing, then I can go ahead and start with mine. But if either Daniel or Mark want to go first, then I'm happy to turn the floor over to them.
Go right ahead, Patrick.
Can you explain to our listeners, have you told Mark what the last part of our show is all about? I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah, these are.
Yeah, what's the point?
The point of this is just closing thoughts. Something that you may have read or seen that strikes your fancy, that you think is interesting and is worth talking about further. But maybe not right now, but something to put your mind wrestling with. Other podcasts have this call, things like the takeaways or the, you know, they're always trying to wrap things up with a nice little bow, which is what we're trying to do here. So I can give you mine just to give you a sense of what we're talking about here.
Get us started.
All right. This is also another article that I read. It's from September 30th of this year,
and man, he reads.
It's from it's actually from Craig.
He doesn't have a job.
Oh, I don't have a Kindle either.
Right too.
And he's the technology person. Hey. What kind of consultant are you?
This is from the Crave blog. This is the gadget blog from CNET, and it's titled "Show Up to School, Win a Plasma TV," and I'm sure this is going to blow Danny's head wide open. And I'll just read a couple of paragraphs of this. Some lucky kid in Detroit will get a 42-inch plasma television just for showing up to school Wednesday. The free TV is part of a plan to lure as many kids as possible to the classroom on Count Day, the designated day for students to be tallied to determine state aid allotments. Detroit, as well as other districts in Michigan, are offering a range of incentives to students in hope of jacking up the attendance rates in an age of budget cuts and dwindling enrollment. In Detroit, every student enrolled above the budget number brings $7,500 in state resources for students in classrooms. Judging from that big screen TV being raffled off in a Count Day contest by radio broadcast company Radio One, we're not just talking prizes like t-shirts here. Detroit students who make it to school Wednesday will also be eligible for a laptop, an iPod Nano, and an American Express gift card through the raffle. So I thought that this was an interesting little article. Yeah, this is in Detroit.
American Express card?
Yeah, American Express gift card.
Oh, boy.
Some might argue that such a reward system sets a dangerous quid pro quo precedent, while others will view it as a savvy, if gimmicky, move that could impact kids' futures. So I thought this was an interesting way of trying to get kids involved with school.
So I like to see the long-term study on the impact of that.
Yeah. There was Danny's, I just blew your mind. Anyway, that's my closing thought. So at this point, I'll turn it over to Daniel, who can clean up that mess.
Well, one of the things that I really wanted to talk about tonight, and I hope all of our listeners will kind of follow this as as we get going here with the whole reauthorization of No Child Left Behind. It's the whole, and again, I'm not pro or con on this. I just think it's something to think about. The idea that Arne Duncan, who's our U.S. Secretary of Education, all right, U.S. Secretary of Education, has teamed up with Al Sharpton and Newt Gingrich, and they joined forces, holding hands, I have a dream.
Holy
cow.
Could we have two more polarizing figures trying to pull us together into a common federal legislation? When has that ever worked?
Is that the access of what?
Listen, I want to see their rendition of Ebony and Ivory. I'm telling you.
give Saturday Night Live some time. I think here again we have we have people who are polarizing political figures. They're going to come down and do their best to go out there to listen to people and how do we fix public education? I would like to see Arne Duncan team up with three kindergarten teachers and figure out how to fix education. I think one of the things that we saw all the way from A Nation at Risk, the No Child Left Behind movement, which, I think had better involvement, is the idea of educators being centrally involved in fixing education. Not at the classroom level, not at the division level, not at the state level, but at the federal level. I'm not sure what Al Sharpton and Newt Gingrich bring to the discussion. And I just think this is an opportunity to kind of set us up as we begin to reauthorize No Child Left Behind to think about, what is the good in the policy? What's the bad in the policy? We're seeing lots of talk now about national, standards and national testing. I mean, is that the fix? I don't know if that's going to take us where we need to go, kind of more of the same, but we're all doing the same thing at the federal level. I think there are issues that we need to deal with. We know, how do we train better teachers? How do we keep more teachers in the teaching profession? How do we help kids who have serious economic issues at home? And of course, we want to do this and not raise any taxes. It's a difficult fix. I just encourage all our listeners to kind of follow the debate as we get going and to get out there and, if Al Sharpton and Newt Gingrich can speak about, what is best for education, I would encourage every citizen to make sure they're there, and every parent, make sure your voice is heard.
All right. Right on. Power to the people.
I'd love it if tomorrow I get people in black suits at my door, sunglasses.
Hey, I don't
know. You're just a radical, Daniel.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Daniel. How about you, Mark? Anything you want to share as a closing thought?
Well, basically, from reflecting on what you started with that article about the library and the changing over it to basically a digital space, change happens in life. Change is life. And that's definitely a radical change. You see this in education where there's this constant wheel grinding to want to do something different. It almost seems like we want to do some tweaks, some slight changes here and there. And in our culture, I think technology is a nice scapegoat to say, okay, well, if we utilize this technology, then that'll be the panacea. And sometimes in I think we get caught up in that wheel of wanting to get the next new thing. And we don't sit back and reflect, well, how does that next new thing fit into the framework that we have developed of what the purpose of education is? And I think we don't even take time to think of what that framework is. We just end up just doing it. And actually a good article or a good book I've read several months ago, and I have it right next to me now because I wanted to read it again just in preparation for this workshop I'm doing. It's titled Real Leaders Don't Do PowerPoint. How to Speak to People, How to Speak So People Listen by Christopher Witt. And he doesn't say get rid of PowerPoint, which, of course, I probably would say so because I like Keynote, but that's another story. But not to get rid of slideshows using it when you're presenting ideas to people, but are you utilizing that technology as a crutch? Does what you do utilizing that technology get you and whomever you're using it with where you want to be? Or are you just fitting into whatever everybody else is doing just so that you can do it and say you've used that technology and then moving on to the next new technology? So I think taking some time and reflecting back, what's the purpose? What's our real framework of education? What's the purpose of education? And how is this thing going to get us where we want to go, or how we initially want to use it, is a good thing. And I think that applies in life in general, sitting back and really reflecting on things that you do before you actually push forward or just keep going and going and going. And that's about it, I think.
All right. Well, thanks, Mark. Thanks, Daniel. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Well, don't be strangers, you guys. Okay.
All right. Well, this is.
I'm available.
See Simon out there. Let us know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm in Hong Kong. I don't think. Does he come over to this area now?
Hey, the field is very large.
He's in the field.
Yeah, the field is very big.